I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 235 of Low Limit Football on this 25th of February, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we're going to look back on the week that was. In Germany, Borussia Dortmund is struggling at the worst time, slipping in Champions League while trying to hold off hard-charging Bayern Munich domestically. Juventus find a way on the weekend against Bologna, while Napoli use their Polish power to win their match in Serie A to try and keep the heat on the champions. MLS is set to open up the 2019 season, but with mixed performances in the CONCACAF Champions League leading up to the Open. Bizarre events in the Carabao Cup final, Cloud City's triumphant performance, and Miguel Almiron makes his home debut with Newcastle. We're going to discuss his performance and much, much more with special guest Mr. Elijah Newsom from Coming Home Newcastle, who will be joining us in a little bit. But right now, the man of the hour, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How was your weekend?
It was all right. I just got to say, Joe, yeah. We also have to we have to send a little happy birthday to a very old man today in Italy. Gigi Donnarumma turns 20.
More proof that if you want to be a great footballer, you have to be born in February. Just another case in point. I can't stress it anymore. Can we finally just put an end to it and say that February is the greatest month to be born in ever?
Yeah, no.
I tried. Come on. I told you, you still have Jesus, and that's going to be hard to overcome. But
exactly.
You know, but
I have Mbappe, too, as well.
You do. Yeah. You have those two. You've got Jesus Christ, and not Gabriel Jesus. You have Jesus Christ and Kylian Mbappe, but I've got apparently the rest. So, you know, Neymar, Cristiano Ronaldo, now Gigi Donnarumma, Roberto Baggio, Jack Grimsey, Taylor Twellman, you know, just saying. But I digress.
Big whoop.
Oh, man. But otherwise, you and I got written up in, more you than me, but my picture made the paper, but you and I got written up in a Newcastle paper this weekend.
We did. We got written up to the Chronicle for showing up to a bar in New York City at 10 in the morning. Who would have thought?
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, at 10 in the morning, proof positive on Saturday that it's 5 o'clock somewhere, okay?
Exactly.
Is it 10 at the M, at 10 in the morning when they come up to you at Football Factory and you're sitting at the bar and they ask you, what would you like to drink? You're there to watch Newcastle, so you order Newcastle.
Exactly.
And apparently it was a good day for Newcastle because the Newcastle fans were buying us beers by the end of the match. So I think all was well. But, you know, again, thanks to Jack Grimsey and Matt Santangelo for meeting us. You and I made our pilgrimage to Football Factory to watch the Newcastle match on the weekend against Huddersfield. And then we made our way around the city to the Grey Bar in New York City, where the Roma Club of New York City meets. And we got to watch the first half of the Roma match with the club.
kind of nervous times against, oh God, I can't even remember who they were playing now. Frosinone. Yeah. You know, little nervous times against them, but,
a lot of profanities, I've realized.
Yes. A lot of Italian profanities were laid out there, in that match, but hey, that's okay. That's, you know, it's passion, I guess. Right. And at least they do it in front of their kids too. So, let's, Rob, before we get moving any further, let's get our On It promo in on the show, and then, we'll jump into trivia and opening thoughts. So here's our promo for On It. And
On It is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, On It combines cutting edge science, earth grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you're climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room or running a marathon, On It is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest-growing health and fitness companies in the world, On It refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product, Alpha Brain, On It, diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting onit.com and using the coupon code BEYOND.
And thanks again to the folks over at On It. Rob, it is your honor for trivia, my friend. So go ahead and let's see what you got tonight, man.
Absolutely. So obviously, I'll keep it more Italian, actually. Right. You know, we went to England. We're going to stay in Italy, actually, though, and talk about your beloved Juve, who, you know, had a good win against Bologna the other day, yesterday. Really suffering, I would say, Joe, don't you think? But that was a really good game, I think, for Bologna to fight off. But in the end, Juventus got the 3 points. And because of that, Juve equaled another club record set for 25 Serie A away matches unbeaten. Can you name the last year, that last season that happened?
25 matches unbeaten away from home.
In the league, yes.
In the league, okay.
Just give me the season.
Give you the season, got it. All right, let me see if...
And it's not too long, by the way.
I didn't think so. Right now I'm trying to remember the year they had 100 points, because I think that's going to be it, but I can't remember exactly what the season was, if it was 14-15 or 15-16. That's kind of what I've got.
I'm going to tell you right there, you're wrong. Oh, both.
Fantastic. Then we're going to probably have to go back to Del Piero's world. We'll see. Maybe I'll get it right. I don't know. I'm going to end up throwing a number at you, and we'll just hope and pray, right?
So, is that how it works nowadays?
That is how it works nowadays. I don't want to cheat. I mean, I've got the internet.
You'd be a great coach, Joe, wouldn't you? Just with that mentality.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about coaching. Let's get into opening thoughts, Rob. And I really, you know, up until about 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon, our show plan was pretty much set. And then the gift that is Chelsea Football Club came along and totally threw that out of whack. And what we're referring to is the nothing but bizarre events yesterday in the Carabao Cup final between Manchester City and Chelsea. This happens in about, I want to say, the 115th, 116th minute. So we've gone into overtime. It's a 0-0 draw. Certainly a turnaround, a massive turnaround from the 6-0 drubbing that Chelsea suffered from Man City just a few weeks earlier. And Kepa Arrizabalaga goes down with an injury. Trainers come out on the pitch. It looks like it's some cramping. Maurizio Sarri is worried about his goalkeeper. Also, he has Willy Caballero on the bench. Willy Caballero is a goalkeeper that spent the last 3 years at Manchester City. He's actually known for being able to stop penalty kicks. An excellent goalkeeper in that regard. He's an ace in the hole on the bench. Maurizio Sarri has a substitution available to him to use. Sees Kepa go down, decides that he's going to pull the trigger. He's going to bring in Willy Caballero, and we're going to go to the penalty shootout with a goalkeeper who knows his opponents because he's played with them and is excellent at shot stopping. This is where bizarro world begins, because Kepa then waves off Maurizio Sarri, waves off his teammate Willy Caballero, says, I'm fine. Sarri begins to lose his mind on the sidelines, and in the end, Kepa stays into the match. They go to penalty kicks. Flubs one from Sergio Aguero, which he should have made the save. Does make one save in the shootout, but in the end, Manchester City win the match on shootout and win the Carabao Cup. And congratulations to Manchester City, because I don't think we should lose sight of what has happened and the fact that they did turn around and bring home their first piece of silverware this season. However, it is totally overshadowed by this bizarre event of somebody that decided that they were not going to come off and basically didn't allow the manager to do his managerial job. There are a million different places to go with this. I'm going to start out, Rob, before I throw this over to you. Kepa has released a statement just a little while ago from Squawka News, who reposted it on Twitter. And I'll read it, quote, "I was very happy to play my first cup final for Chelsea yesterday and very proud of the team's performance. I have thought a lot more about yesterday's events. Although there was misunderstanding, on reflection, I made a big mistake with how I handled the situation. I wanted to take the time today to apologize fully and in person to the coach, to Willie, my teammates, and to the club. I have done this, and now I want to offer the same apology to the fans. I will learn from this episode and will accept any punishment or discipline the club decides is appropriate." Then, since then, I believe Chelsea has fined him in this event, but just complete bizarre world in terms of what happened. And I want to go to you, Rob, now, because I'd like your initial thoughts on everything. I mean, I will obviously give my two cents on this, but I'd like your initial thoughts on how this transpired, how everyone reacted, how the media's reacted, how the team has reacted, how the players have reacted. What is your thoughts about this whole situation?
Well, I think the media reacted rightly so, you know, overreactively. I think when you look at a situation like this, you say that there was like 5 minutes left until the end of the game. I think there has been so many, I would say, criticism and cynicism, I would say, towards Mauricio Sarri recently, you know, a manager that is under, literally, he's on the hot seat, only his first season at Chelsea, because of the recent results and, I guess, the attitude that he is possessing at the moment. So, obviously, you're going to have two sides of this. You have people that are indecisive. You're either siding between a manager that is polarizing and is not winning the hearts of a lot of fans. And then you have Kepa, you know, a 24-year-old goalkeeper. I only have to say this. You're the most expensive goalkeeper of all time. You have that title to yourself. And you're going to act like this because you think that, yes, I understand the confidence. Rightly so. Great. But you do have both sides where you have to say, okay, so what really happened? Of course, after the game, both Kepa and Sarri said that the situation was a misunderstanding because Sarri believed that Kepa was actually really injured with a cramp to continue, but he actually felt okay. So you give the benefit of the doubt to Kepa, saying, okay, if he's fine, then, you know, what benefit do I need to, as a coach, to sub him out? However, when you go on the other side, you know, yeah, I think any player needs to respect the coach. I think that's how it says. You have to respect the coach because they're the ones making the decisions in these type of games. I understand the heat of the moment was coming, you know, Willy Caballero, you know, who's actually their penalty saves, you know, won Manchester City the Carabao Cup, I think 3 years ago. So obviously, yeah, you have that experience. But then you have a player that is refusing to sub out. And even so, he was winking at the camera. So it's kind of indecisive. But if I had to choose a side, I mean, you have to side Sarri because he's the one making these decisions. Now, where Sarri is completely wrong in doing is storming out because of the attitude of Kepa. That's where I think to myself, yeah, this is really going to go really bad. Now, because you look at how he's already under fire, rightly so, in terms of his future. So it's hard to pick a side because there's just so many details and so many storylines and so much stuff that you can't pick a side. But I think on the moral standpoint, you kind of do have to pick Sarri in this sense. Mm-hmm. You have to respect the manager. I mean, that's just how it works out. For any player, you have to respect the decisions of the manager. And if a manager is going to say that and is trying to say, you know, you've done your job, congrats. But I think that when we're coming into a situation like this with a goalkeeper that is experienced, then you have to do it. Case in point, remember the 2014 World Cup, the quarterfinal between the Netherlands and Costa Rica, where Cillessen was subbed out, I think in the 119th, 120 minute, yes. And Tim Krul came in against Costa Rica and won that shootout. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a fine example of why these situations have to happen. Right. Could have it changed the result? Perhaps. You never know what could have happened in a penalty shootout. It's all luck in the end. So I think in the end, when analyzing this situation now more than 24 hours later, you have to sign the manager because that's someone that you have to respect. Yes, he's under fire, but in the end, he's got a job to do, and that job is to try to control the players and ultimately decide how the game is supposed to be won, and in this case, the shootout, which unfortunately didn't win. Also kind of mention out, Kepa was fined, actually. He's fined a week's wages that will be donated to the Chelsea Foundation. His weekly wages, £195,000.
Wow. I don't know if it's enough. I don't know if it's enough.
Is that the right punishment?
No.
Really?
No, not for me.
Okay, what would you do?
Not for me. Let me give it to you in real life terms. Okay.
Sure.
If your boss tells you to do a job.
Okay.
And you say, no, boss, I'm not doing it. You do it in private. You know, you're in his office, right? Boss tells you to do X. It's totally within your, you know, he's not asking you to do anything illegal or anything like that. You know, he's asking you to do whatever, take out the garbage. It's part of your job description. And you look at him in the office and you say, no. No, boss, I'm not doing that. You're probably going to get in trouble for that, right? You're telling your boss, no, I'm not doing my job.
Right.
Now, take your discussion that was in a private office, okay, and move it out into the workplace proper,
yep,
where mm-hmm. all your coworkers and all your employees are there, right?
Yep.
And now your boss says, take out the trash. And you loudly and proudly stand up on your chair at your office and go, no, I'm not taking that out, period. I'm not doing what you're telling me to do. You know what happens to you, Rob, in the real world when you disobey your boss like that publicly in front of all your coworkers? You know what happens?
You get the chopping block.
You get fired. You get sacked, okay? That's what Kepa did yesterday. Maurizio Sarri told him, come off. Willy Caballero's on. Whether he was injured or not, that is totally out of this situation for me. When the manager says to you, you come off, and you say, no, I'm not coming off, it takes away all of that respect for authority. I don't think there is enough that can happen. The problem is that in football, the inmates truly do run the asylum. Okay, who do you fire? Do you fire the guy making $3 million, or do you guys fire the guy making $300 million? Because you're on the hook for the money, okay? So who do you fire? You sack the manager. That's what we always see. We sack the manager. And what Kepa did yesterday for me, and I've been saying this all along, this is not some new revelation, okay, is something that I think has been going on in the Chelsea locker room for 5 or 6 years now. And it is a cancer, Rob. It is this attitude by this particular bunch of players that says we are above the manager. They did it to Mourinho. Mourinho returned silverware. Remember, Rob? He returned silverware. And then what did they do? I even said it to you. I probably said it on this show 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes, he did.
They look like they stopped playing for him. Like there was no effort and it was a joke. Then Antonio Conte comes in. Same team, by the way, right? Same Eden Hazard, same players. Conte comes in. What do they do? They win the EPL, right? Then the next year, what? They don't like Conte and his way anymore? Okay, so what are we going to do? We're going to stop playing again. And then Conte gets sacked. Now Sarri comes in. Remember how bright Chelsea started this season, right? We're talking about a three-team race. We weren't talking about a two-team race. We were talking about a three- and a four-team race with Tottenham Hotspur. And then what happens? They don't like Sarri. Now, a lot of people want to point the finger at Sarri, and I get it. Because Sarri is stuck in his ways. He's stuck in his ways in the fact that he has his certain core of players and he chooses them and that's it. And I get it. And it's a fault. It's a fault of his. But it does not come into play in this situation. In this situation, it is strictly, for me, I started to feel like the club is starting to revolt against Maurizio Sarri. And now you saw it happen publicly. And this is why I'm saying this. Not only did we see Kepa disrespect his teammate in Willy Caballero, his coaches in Gianfranco Zola and Maurizio Sarri because they were both shouting at him, but you also have the players that have a responsibility. This is the kind of place, and I didn't get a chance to read the comments yet, but I saw John Terry commented on this, and I've got a feeling, me personally, that if John Terry was on the pitch for this, John Terry would have grabbed Kepa by the scruff of his neck and dragged him and thrown him off the field. Because for John Terry, the shirt meant more than anything else, right? The emblem. I play for Chelsea. it meant more to him than anything else. And I think these players, this current crop of players, aren't seeing it that way. So for me, the punishment of a week's wages, big deal, whatever. If I'm and let's also change it a little bit and talk about it from Maurizio Sarri's standpoint. If I'm Maurizio Sarri, let's be honest, Rob. We've been talking about him out at the end of the season no matter what, right? I mean, you and I have discussed that. We've discussed it in private. We've discussed it in public here on the show, that we feel that Maurizio Sarri is done at the end of the year because things aren't going as well as they would have liked. And Roman Abramovich is not one to stick around and stick with a project. He's more than happy to change things up. And the Chelsea fans are also clamoring for it because they don't like Sarri ball. They don't like the way he plays. And to an extent, you can agree with them in what's happened. But the writing's on the wall for Maurizio Sarri. He is going to be out at the end of the season, pretty much no matter what. June 1st, you're pretty much done. In fact, he's already been rumored to be linked with a job that's not open right now in Roma, right? I mean, we've heard that rumor. So for me, if I'm Maurizio Sarri, I tell Kepa to go pound sand. He sits on the bench. He doesn't see the pitch ever again because it doesn't matter.
I don't know about ever again.
Well, under me, he doesn't.
Yeah. But even then that's just going to change when he does get sacked.
But that's fine because he's not going to play for me. He's never going to play for me again. And this is where I'm a stubborn Italian. But maybe Maurizio Sarri is a stubborn Italian too. But for me, he will not play for me ever again. I won't put him out there because of that disrespect. And I got to be honest with you. For me, Maurizio Sarri storming down the tunnel, I mean, he got stopped at the door. But when he stormed down the tunnel, I had almost hoped that he was walking off to quit his job. Not so much for the sake of Chelsea, but for the sake of Sarri, because this is over at Chelsea for him. This is done. There is no saving this. And what you saw out of Kepa and what you saw out of the players with this quote-unquote missed communication or misunderstanding, what you saw out of the rest of the team, David Luiz, all of them, is just proof positive that the core of the locker room at Chelsea Football Club is rotten. It is rotten to the core, and it needs to be changed. Now, where do you change it? I don't know. I think, and I've always said this all along, I think Eden Hazard's one of the big pieces of that rotten core. I've said that years ago. I said that under Antonio Conte, where Eden Hazard was one of the best players in year one. In year two, he looked like a shell of himself, okay? And it wasn't because Conte changed systems. Conte is not a system changer. It wasn't that they brought in other players or didn't bring in other players. It was the fact that Eden Hazard was mailing it in because he didn't like playing for Antonio Conte anymore. And that's, again, that's not proven publicly. That's my opinion, and I'm allowed to have my opinion. So I think that it's rotten to the core. I think guys like Eden Hazard should be gone. I think David Luiz should be gone. You almost think, and I know it won't happen because I just brought him in, but you almost think that Kepa should be gone because he's, as a 24-year-old goalkeeper, to show that kind of disrespect to his teammates and his head coach, I think is deplorable, okay? And I think it should, he shouldn't go there. A couple other things.
But I will mention this.
Sure.
Does Sarri's job get saved if they return silverware?
No. No.
Regardless if they win the Europa League
regardless, he is done. He is done there. You know, and it's unfortunately, Sarri's a guy that needs a few years, okay? But it's done. That's a done deal. I think it was done before this match happened. I think it was done probably about 4 to 6 weeks ago, okay? A couple things I want to point out as well. Get French Football News and our friends over there tweeted just, I believe it was yesterday, and I'm going to quote the tweet, on the player power front, Chelsea and PSG have long mirrored each other. This is unbelievable, and David Luiz, who has played for both, is clearly not encouraging Kepa to exit the field despite coming over to him several times. You saw this in the replay. David Luiz was talking to him over and over and over again, but never really encouraged him to, hey, you got to get off the pitch. Never did it. This is one of the things that leads me to believe that David Luiz is one of those pieces, okay, one of those pieces that is questionable. It boggles the mind, and I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and Rob, I'd like your reaction to what I said, but I feel like Sarri's done. We knew that already, and probably the best move for him would be to quit this week, and that's my long and short of it. How about you?
I don't think he quits this week. I just think that with so much in stake with the Europa League, with the fact that that's probably their best shot of making it to a European title, to the Champions League next year, I don't think they're going to risk it. They could, because that wouldn't be surprising of Chelsea to do it, but I just don't see it happening. Having said that, I just think that if it's going to be like that, what you're saying, Joe, then they're going to fire you over benching Kepa. Because as soon as that, they spent $70 million to sign this guy. He's the most expensive goalkeeper of all time. You know, you think they're gonna risk it all and put him on the bench? No, because that's not how it works, unfortunately, in this world, in terms of reputation and marketing and trying to win over fans and shareholders. You know, what's the best thing to do? You sack a guy who's cheaper, essentially, and that's going to be Sarri. Unfortunately, that's how I see it. And when you're portraying your world, essentially, Joe, I mean, no offense, but, you know, if you do what you did, if you were in Chelsea, if you were in Sarri's boots, shoes, you'd be sacked, man.
Yeah, but I would have walked. I would have walked. I would have gone right to Abramovich's office and gone, hey, I'm out. Thanks. Thanks for the times. I had a great time. I learned a little English. I'm going back to Italy. I would be done. So I would be completely done. A couple other tweets that I wanted to point out here real quick. And this one coming from the Yanks are coming, Neil Blackman, the folks over there. Sarri's Napoli teams were cohesive units that played with tactical news and joy. He didn't forget how to manage in 8 months. This goes beyond a manager, and we saw it again today. Chelsea's culture is broken. So I'm not the only one that sees it. And I think you see it too, Rob. I don't think this is lost.
No, I don't think the coaching style is broken in 8 months. I agree with Neil.
Yeah.
I just know that there's something going on behind the scenes.
I agree. And I think it's undermining Maurizio Sarri, just like it's undermined Antonio Conte. It undermined Jose Mourinho. It's undermining, and I think we're seeing more of it lately.
But now, who do you blame? Do you blame Roman Abramovich?
Yeah, I think he has to. I think he has to shoulder some of the blame.
When do you have to blame? You know, the director, Bruce Buck. I think he's the chairman. When do you start to blame him?
You start
to blame the top brass rather than the coaches.
Well, this goes into the culture at Chelsea and what's going on. Abramovich has the final say. Right, I think most people agree that Roman Abramovich has the final say what happens at Chelsea Football Club. So I think you have to lay it on Abramovich. But here's the thing. He's the owner. He's not hired. He owns the joint. So it's his business. And if he wants to drive Chelsea Football Club into the ground, that's his business. It's his money, right? And I don't think that will happen. I mean, I'm being a little extreme there with thinking that he would drive Chelsea Football Club into the ground. But at the same time, he's got to fix the culture. The culture needs to be fixed because the culture is rotten. And that's my opinion. Fine. But it's my opinion. And I think the culture at Chelsea Football Club is rotten. And as a Juventino, I got to tell you, I don't know that I don't need David Luiz. Let's be honest. I don't need him. Okay. I don't know that I want Eden Hazard unless I have a strong person in that locker room, maybe like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, I think he's going to Real Madrid.
Oh, I think so. I think so, too. I think he's going there, too.
I mean, he said that multiple times. I mean, that's been rumored for months, years now. I mean, I'm not surprised if he does go to Real Madrid this year.
But also think about this. He's going to go to Real Madrid, which is another situation that is in flux. Santiago Solari, you know, is he going to be there at the end of the season? Are they going to hire a new coach? If Eden Hazard, if it's true what I'm thinking, where he's one of the major pieces of the cancer that is the Chelsea locker room, and he takes that attitude and that thought process to Real Madrid, who's going to want the Real Madrid job? It's already challenging enough as it is, right? I mean, Florentino Perez, the Galacticos, everything that comes with it, the Champions Leagues, the La Ligas, the Copa del Rey, all of it. It's already a massive, massive burden on someone's shoulders, whoever that person may be. And now you're going to bring in someone that might be perceived as a cancer into the locker room as a leader? I think Real Madrid at that point would be the worst job to take in the world for 2019-2020 if the pieces fall the way that way. I would not take the job at all. I mean, would you want to walk into that locker room
in a situation like that? No.
With massive pressure.
I mean, you got Florentino Perez's pressure, the fans. I mean, it's one of the most cutthroat jobs as it is, but
yeah.
If a culture is going to be that messed up, forget it. I don't care if they pay me.
No thanks.
A buttload of money.
And there's not enough money. I don't think there is. I think if you did go, it would be. I would sign a 1-year contract for $1 billion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And have Florentino Perez personally write that check to you in his office.
Guaranteed money, exactly. You write the check. You know, I'm coming here for 75 million euro as your coach. It's a one-year contract. I'll come here. You write the check now. You pay me now, and I'll stay. Okay? That'll be in the contract. I can't quit. You have to fire me. Right?
Yep.
I would do that. But that's the only way I would do is if they guaranteed me the money to be there, because that is going
careful,
to be...
Careful now, Joe. I don't want them to call you a mercenary.
It's going to be a colossal disaster. It's going to be a complete disaster. If you are going to take an incentive-laden contract at Real Madrid with Eden Hazard coming in, with Gareth Bale always as an uncertainty, with an aging back line with Marcelo, with Sergio Ramos, Mr. Red Card himself, with think about this, the previous cancer of Thibaut Courtois, okay? We got to remember, he's there. No way. No thanks. I'm good. I'm all good. I'll coach Huesca in the second division.
No, you know what? Let's go to what's it called?
It doesn't matter. Insert team here.
Yeah.
I would rather go to Chelsea.
Location-wise. No, Vigo, because that's like it's in an island. So yeah,
there you go.
There you go.
I'm good with that, too.
Barcelona. Go to Barcelona.
Yeah. I would rather, because I don't think you get... I think you have strong presences in the locker room at Barcelona, strong enough that if an Eden Hazard came in there, he wouldn't. Look at case in point, Ousmane Dembele, right?
Right.
I mean, he was a little bit of a train wreck. They were fining him. They were talking about, you know, showing up late to practice, all that stuff. Somebody said something to Ousmane Dembele, and we don't hear a word about it anymore.
You know who I think it was?
Who?
Who do you think? Who do you think?
You would think it's Messi, but
I think it is Messi for the captain.
Yeah, sure.
And you have to respect the guy that is Messi.
For me, I think it's a strong presence. I'm willing to bet it's either a guy like Ter Stegen or Sergio Busquets.
Maybe Piqué as well.
Or maybe Piqué. He'd be the third one. I'm willing to bet that it's one of those.
Right.
More so than Messi. But I think Messi certainly had a say in there, because I don't think anything happens without Messi, you know, knowing about it. So Let's jump off of Chelsea and let's jump. Let's head to North London, right? I'm not sorry, not North London, North England.
No, Northeast England.
Northeast England, and Elijah Newsome. We were able to catch up with Elijah yesterday and talk to him about Miguel Almiron's huge debut at Newcastle at home in the 2-0 victory over Huddersfield, missing an unfortunate post. It was such a beautiful play too. I thought he scored. But from coming home, Newcastle, Mr. Elijah Newsome. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from coming home, Newcastle on SB Nation is Elijah Newsome. Elijah, welcome to the show. I want to open with a quick question here on Newcastle United. This is a team that really started out this season poorly. They opened with only 3 points in their first 10 matches. But in their last 10 matches so far in the EPL, they've picked up 12 points. What's been the biggest turnaround for them so far this season?
I think there's a couple of things. There was a lot of chaos to start off the Newcastle season with Rafa being promised after a 10th place finish that he'd get every penny he wanted, he could have, that the club generated. He'd get all of it. And we had a summer in which, you know, Newcastle didn't spend a lot. So there was a lot of folks in the beginning of the season, much like the end of Atlanta United season last season, where there was more off the field stuff that was kind of really getting to the heads of many players. And then Newcastle just kind of got screwed in who they had to play. I mean, they had to start off with like the likes of Tottenham, Man City, Manchester United, all this stuff back to back to back. And it was just, we weren't really expecting to get a lot of points. And then in the past couple months, you've seen a couple things. I think one of the big things is that Newcastle found a system. Rafa's adopted and found a system that works well with the players he has. We've gone to a 3-in-the-back formation, utilizing the fact that we have a plethora of good center backs. And so one of them just got returned from injury, and Newcastle have only lost, I think they've only lost one match with him back in the starting lineup, Florian Lejeune. So there's been a couple factors, but really it's more of now the club's kind of at a place where everything's settled. We broke the transfer record, and there's a lot less off-field distractions. And then, you know, we've kind of found a system that seems to work well. And allows us to pick up points against top teams like Man City, and then as well as, you know, beating Huddersfield. So those are kind of the two big things.
You know, and Rob, I want to kind of follow up with a question to you here on this, because now that we look forward, we have 11 matches left in the season for Newcastle. Really only four matches against the top 10 teams in the league. They faced West Ham on the road, who's ninth. They faced Bournemouth on the road at 10th. Arsenal on the road at fourth place, and Liverpool at home really towards the end of the season. I believe the last fixture, it's the second last fixture. Last fixture for them is going to be Newcastle on the road on May 12th. So really a schedule that is heavy with the bottom of this, of the EPL table. And we look at the matchup on Saturday against Huddersfield. Granted, they got that early red card. They were able to finish off with a 2-0 win, which really you and I watched the match together and thought that it could have been way more than 2-0. But moving forward for Newcastle the rest of the season, they're currently sitting, I believe it is 4 points outside the relegation zone. How do you see the rest of the season shaping up for them, especially given the you know, what they've done so far?
I think the fortune of having that kind of lighter schedule, I mean, yes, it's hard to say lighter considering how unpredictable the Premier League is, but I think when you look at it long term, when you look at the teams that you mentioned, you know, looking forward, Burnley, West Ham, Everton, Bournemouth, Arsenal, Crystal Palace, Leicester, Southampton, Brighton, Hove Albion, Liverpool, and Fulham, you would think that that would be enough to, you know, give them, which in the end will be the main objective for them to achieve safety, you know, 40 points. You know, for them, they have 28 now, so they need to get at least, you know, five more wins to secure them safety from the Premier League. And to get that in the last, 10 more games. Yeah, you have 10 more games for them to get half of those games where they need wins. It's likely. It's absolutely possible for them to happen. I think it's really shifted gears, especially after the win against Manchester City exactly a month ago. You know, even though they were unfortunate to lose that game against Spurs, you know, they did tie Wolverhampton and they beat Huddersfield. Now they have Burnley on Tuesday. And, you know, this could be the next big step for them moving forward to, you know, achieve safety. But I think when you're looking at all the other teams that are dropping, you know, we saw teams lose over the weekend as well. I forgot the team, but you see teams like Cardiff losing, you know, you see Wolves signing Bournemouth, you know, you see other teams just, you know, trying to, and you look at the gap between that, you know, Brighton, Southampton, Fulham, Huddersfield, you know, those teams are basically, Huddersfield I think is already relegated at this point, if they're not already, but, you know, for Newcastle, this is coming at a right time, and they just need to maintain that form, especially in the big games moving forward. And you know, it's been quite an interesting, a month, I would say, over there in Newcastle. I mean, the big talking of the town has to be Elijah mentioned, the record transfer signing of Miguel Almirón, you know, just a little player that we haven't been talking about for a while. But having said that, Elijah, I mean, wow, you know, you saw his debut, his 25-minute cameo against Wolverhampton. You saw the full 80 minutes that you saw against Newcastle. He just looked incredible. You know, I'm watching him. I mean, he was just fantastic. I mean, you know, unfortunate not to get that goal initially from a chip. But just looking at that, and this is for my personal sake, I mean, just looking at that, that just shows the kind of quality and the flair that he has for someone to do such a thing in the Premier League. I think it's fantastic. I mean, what are your thoughts of having watched Miguel Almirón's two games in a Newcastle shirt at the moment?
Yeah, I think you and I, we both are in the same boat in terms of, I think you and I both, either on our pod or our respective podcasts and on Twitter, have been very vocal about, all right, this guy is the real deal, and he's going to be loved by Newcastle supporters. I don't really think the transition to the Premier League was going to be that huge of a jump, and we were just kind of all proven right. I think he brought a lot of what I saw at Atlanta, and I saw there's things that he brings that translates no matter what league you're playing with, like his work rate, his tenacity on the ball. Like, it doesn't matter what league you're in, that's always going to be a fact. That's always going to be something that's going to be game changing. Truth be told, he almost had multiple assists in both matches. I mean, in the Wolves match, he had a cross into like Rondon that barely, like, you know, went out wide from Rondon. And then this past Huddersfield match, there was literally six chances he created. And, you know, someone either messed it up or, you know, completely, there was a miscue or something, but I mean, he's been great. And I think, like you were saying earlier, we have the fortunate opportunity, which, you know, we start off the season playing the top six, but you know how the Premier League works, where you just, you know, you kind of, you play the reverse fixture. So we had a pretty tough start in terms of, you know, at once we got to the midway point in January, but of course we get, you know, the middle and the bottom of the table to kind of finish out the season. And so it really is going to be a good chance for Miguel to shine. Like we're saying, there's not a lot of top tier talent he has to really come up against. We're playing the middle and the bottom of the Premier League. So you would expect for him to have a really good rest of the season as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just looking at that as well, I mean, it kind of does work in his favor because, yes, you know, even though he doesn't have to face that tough opposition until, well, if you consider West Ham a tough opposition, you know, you have to wait till April until they play Arsenal. But even then, you know, having to play two home games in a row now, the one against Burnley on Tuesday, you could just see over there that he is really going to be demonstrated of the talent that he's shown. And he's already winning the hearts of a lot of fans over there in Newcastle. I mean, just looking at all the stadium clap and standing up to applaud him after the wonderful game that he had, I thought it was incredible. I mean, you know, I've been talking to a lot of Newcastle fans. You know, obviously the Newcastle United fan base on Twitter is spectacular. And everyone's just very happy to see that, you know, this is a player that they haven't seen in ages, you know, demonstrate the quality and the tenacity and the consistency that a player has. And yes, he could get better. But, you know, if you have to improve one, and Elijah, I mean, I'll ask you this as a Newcastle fan. If you have to improve one thing for Miguel Mirón to, you know, be better than what he is already now, what would that one thing be to help the team?
It's kind of the same thing that's kind of been plaguing his career so far. And it unfortunately for him, it hasn't really been that big of a deal. But once teams start finding out that he really doesn't like going to his right and using that right foot, I think that's going to be something to pay attention to and see how teams defend him. And that's something that he has to work on. When you're at this level, you need to be able to play pretty consistently with both feet. And he has a decent right foot. It's not bad. It's just that's probably his biggest weakness, in my opinion. I think he relies a lot on his left, and it's not bad when the left is providing, 24 goals and 28 assists or something, whatever he had in Atlanta. So I think that'd be the thing for me.
Right, absolutely. Now, Joe, I'm going to jump in real quick and talk about Miguel a bit more in tactically, because you saw Rafa Benitez put in a 4-4-1 where you have Miguel on the wing contributing from there. And, you know, we obviously know that he is capable of doing the wonderful job that he does on the wing or center. Behind a striker, knowing the game that we saw against Huddersfield, you saw how consistent he is. You know how players like Rondon and Perez were going up, getting the ball from him. Do you think that Rafa Benitez should shift Miguel Mirón more central to play in that role that he can connect to players like Rondon or Perez much better, or do you feel that given the position that Rafa puts him in already at the point at wing, that would be better suited for him moving forward?
You know, I'm kind of torn, and I'm torn, and again, the sample size is very small. We really just have the other day's 90 minutes to look at. So I'm a little torn because the one thing that Almirón offered when he was moved out a little wider is the ability to use his speed to play. One thing that we don't really think about too much with Miguel Almirón is the actual pace that he has, which he's a very, very fast player. And I think it served him very, very well. If you think about that ball that he ran onto, that he did put off the post, he ran onto that from an onside position when the ball was played over the top. So he's got a lot of speed to burn. I know that we've seen plenty of Miguel Almirón, the creator at Atlanta United, but I think maybe the speed factor is a little bit more beneficial to the way Rafa wants to play, because you do have the big target in Salomon Rondon up top, which you, as long as you can use Almirón, the creator, to help feed him, that would be a thing. But usually that feeding comes from out wide. So I think with Almirón, I think the way Rafa used him yesterday, a little bit wider, a little bit more to the left, I think is a better spot for him. But I think in general, he offers the flexibility where Rafa can change what he's doing tactically to move up against the team that he's playing against. So for me, it's tough to say right now, but I think I liked the way Rafa used him on Saturday the best.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, this is obviously going to be early days because, you know, he's obviously been here in January and he only has a couple games left until the end of the season. And Elijah, just moving forward, you know, we already know the capability that he has. We already know what he could provide to the team. But from a personal level, and I think he's already demonstrated that anyway in the two games that we've already seen him. But moving forward, until the rest of the season, assuming that Newcastle do go and stay in the Premier League with 40 points and achieve safety, what's the one thing that you want Miguel Marrone to contribute, and really what do you expect from him moving forward into the end of the season?
I think contribution wise, I think he's already, you know, kind of been the spark that, you know, Newcastle fans expect. I mean, you were talking about, you know, how Rafa is a wing back and Yedlin as the other wing back. And that's been working for us really well. And part of the reason why that's been working for us is that Newcastle haven't had a true number 10 in this whole season. So Ayoze Perez is essentially playing where Miguel was. And that was working out better because, like Joe alluded to, you're able to take advantage of the speed and there's not a lot of pressure to really create from within. So I think, you know, Miguel has the opportunity to still be that guy that sparks attacks no matter where he's being played. We could switch back to, we usually run a 4-2-3-1. We could switch back to that easily. And as long as Miguel is continuing to put in a good shift, continuing to work extremely hard and continuing to be as ambitious as he was, then I think that's all we expect as Newcastle fans, because it's just, we haven't had it since Hatem Ben Arfa. And that was years ago. So that's all we really expect from him is, you know, possibly get a couple assists. I'm not expecting him to go out and get 10 goals. I'm not expecting him to go out and get 5 goals. I'd be shocked if he gets more than 3 goals at the end of the season, just because you can already tell how unselfish he likes to play. So, you know, maybe a couple assists, but continuing to work hard is really what Newcastle fans are expecting from him.
Absolutely. That's some of the things that I was able to understand, that, you know, as long as he's a player that works hard, you know, gives it all, shows that he wants to be there, gives 110% with the Newcastle shirt, and, you know, getting the assist and the goals is a wonderful asset as well. But as long as he demonstrates that and helps the team win, then I think that's all you can really ask for, at least until the end of the season. But moving from Marrone, I want to talk about another player that impressed me watching Newcastle yesterday, and that's Sean Longstaff, you know, 21 years old. For me, I think he was absolutely crucial in that midfield. I think he really had the capability, the talent, and the consistency that really I enjoyed. You know, I was hearing about him, and I thought to myself, okay, I didn't know much about him, but then I started watching him, and, you know, he really looked like an amazing talent. I mean, you know, Elijah, for people that maybe aren't familiar with Sean Longstaff, what can you tell the people here that, you know, aren't familiar with him?
So I'll start with this. Roberto, you've been on our pod, Coming of Newcastle Radio, mm-hmm. CHN Radio, and my co-host Greg is obsessed with Sean Longstaff, like obsessed with him. And Greg, he joined our staff a couple years ago and started writing about the youth team and was like, guys, this Longstaff kid is the real deal. And he knows so many random stats about Sean, but he's been incredibly composed and he was thrown into the fire. I mean, he made his debut in the second half against Liverpool, and he actually, to this date still, is the only player in the Premier League that's completed a dribble past Virgil van Dijk to this day in the Premier League. And so that was his start. And he started out well, he played well, and he's been calm, cool, and collected and composed. And that's what you want. And he's shown, you know, athleticism that some of our other midfielders in that role don't have. And he's also shown the ability to track back. So I think if you're looking at him, you've never seen him play. I think one thing to really remember is that this kid is literally 21 and was thrown into the fire maybe 2 months ago and has done enough to beat out the starters who have now returned from injury day in and day out. He's still that guy starting in the midfield, and he's still a big catalyst for Newcastle coming out of the midfield. So it should be interesting to see, you know, what happens when we get, you know, Jonjo Shelvey, who likely is our best holding midfielder, back, and see what Rafa does, whether he plays them alongside each other or he lets Longstaff run his course until he has a bad game and throws Jonjo back in there. But for now, it's great seeing Longstaff get the shot. And it's something that, you know, Newcastle fans have been starved of. We haven't had a local boy, you know, make it to the first team as of recent. Newcastle's academy is not really known for producing a lot of talent. Newcastle have been more of a buying club, you know, choosing to buy players from, you know, smaller leagues or in the past, a lot of guys from the French leagues. And so it's nice to see a guy come out of our academy, and something that Rafa's stressed to Mike Ashley that you need to invest in the academy. And I think this is one of the signings that that could spark an investment in the academy. So it was nice to see him play. And I'm not going to be surprised if he has a long shot goal this season. I mean, he had one in a cup match, and we saw his effort. That was a curling effort that literally hit the post, like the frame of the crossbar, really. And Greg told us that when we were doing our live pod the other day, and he said, Sean Longstaff, 7 out of his 8 goals when he was on loan with Blackpool were from outside of the box. He had one goal inside the box. So he's a guy that's going to also be exciting to see, and he's going to have some screamers.
Now, Elijah, I want to just jump in here because I think it's great that we've gone down this path of looking at the Newcastle side as really a young team. And you look at back on that on the listing of the players, Sean Longstaff, 21 years old. They add Almiron at 25 years old. Ayoze Perez is also 25 years old. So this team is starting to trend a little younger, which is a credit to what Rafa Benitez is trying to build at Newcastle, something that's built for the long haul. My question to you is, I know that we talk about the Jordan Lukaku transfer that kind of fell through because of a failed physical, but for the most part, Rafa got what he wanted in this particular winter transfer window. So moving forward into the summer window, does Rafa stick around, first of all, and what does Newcastle do moving forward to add the next piece that Rafa is looking for?
That's a loaded question, yeah. And it's a question not many people have the answer to, because on the surface level, I think if you're looking at it from purely like, we know Rafa wanted Almiron, he got Almiron in a left back, which is what he wanted. Mm-hmm. But you know, this and you look at it in the long run, Rafa's wanted a backup left back since he's gotten here. We've had one left back on the roster since he's gotten here. So it's one of those things where, yes, he got the investment now that he wanted. Is that enough to make him stay? Maybe it's enough to give him a year-long extension. But in the long run, Rafa wants two things. He wants assurances from Mike Ashley in writing on a contract, because he's been promised money before and he hasn't money. He hasn't gotten it. He wants it in writing in his extension. Hey, I will get this amount of money, this percentage of what we produce as a club in order to spend on players. That he wants to bring in younger players, like you said, younger players who he thinks are going to be promising. Some of the guys Newcastle have been linked to and missed out on are insane young talent. Like they wanted Gelson Martins, the Atletico Madrid winger who's on loan to Monaco. He was a guy that we were linked to, and unfortunately that was one of those things that fell through due to money as due as well to player interest. So you know, Rafa wants that written assurance. He wants money, and then he wants that long term investment from Mike Ashley. He wants Mike Ashley to stop seeing Newcastle is just something that generates profit, but to look at it as a business that he can actually grow, and the more that he invests into it, the bigger his return is. He's trying to stress to it, you know, over interviews and stuff, that hey, if you invest in the academy, that's like you're going to get 100% profit. You're literally bringing in guys that you don't pay money for, and you can go on and sell them for a lot of money instead of, you know, scraping up together cash to spend, you know, £2 million on a guy that may or may not work. It's interesting to see, you know, what actually will happen. And I think the long-term goal of Rafa, he said he wants to win trophies. And the way to do that is investment. And a lot of that hinges, honestly, on whether or not Mike Ashley is going to be there next summer. I think the short-term goal is that get Rafa at least extended, because Mike Ashley still wants to sell the club, apparently. And if Mike Ashley sells the club and Rafa's at the helm, I think that you could see Newcastle go back to, you know, their days where they were, you know, playing Champions League football. I mean, that's a bit ambitious, but, you know, with a manager like Rafa and some actual investment, you could see Newcastle consistently being a team that, where it's not a shock that they got 10th last year, where it's more of a shock if they get 10th. They're going to be, you know, they could potentially be a team where they're consistently in that top seven or eight teams in the Premier League. So I think that's the long-term goal, win trophies with investment in the academy and within players, but there's no guarantee Rafa stays if Mike Ashley's still at the helm.
No doubt. Before we let you go, I'd like you to plug your podcast and where we can find you on the internet.
Yeah, so you can follow the podcast at @CHN_radio. We do two episodes a week. It's with my boy Greg, and we actually are releasing an episode Monday. We did a live podcast with the former Newcastle player, one of those guys who played in the era of Champions League football for Newcastle, Warren Barton. He did a live podcast with us in Denver. So that's something to be looking forward to. And then you can follow our website, cominghomenewcastle.com. It's a straight up blog. We write about everything from jersey kit leaks to why we hate Mike Ashley to reporting just the news. So that's where you can follow us. I mean, if you want to follow me, you can follow me at @Elijah_Newsom, but it's a lot of really bad sports takes and retweeting pictures of dogs. So,
well, there's a lot of really bad takes in the internet everywhere. So I think we'll get yours an exception, right, Joe?
Exactly. That's a fact. So, Elijah, again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to hearing you on the internet sometime very soon, and coming back on our show as well.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And that was Elijah Newsom from Coming Home Newcastle. Rob, I have some breaking news here real quick. I have two more birthdays in the month of February to give you. Our former co-host, Mr. Mike Orr, Sir Bob Mike Orr, is a February birthday boy. And one I just saw on the internet right now, Shaka Hislop. Happy 50th birthday. So,
no, stop convincing me.
I needed an extra goalkeeper on the team. So let's speaking of greatest of all times, let's talk a little Lionel Messi, right? Mm-hmm. Lionel Messi scored a hat trick on the weekend in really what is a huge week for Barcelona in general. Scored the first three goals of Barca's four goals in a 4-2 victory over Sevilla on the road. One of them, a fantastic left-footed volley. One of the things they say about Lionel Messi is he can't score with his right foot. What does he do? He sticks a ball in the corner with his right foot.
No, but I think Pele said that, not...
I think I've heard from a few people, actually. Never mind Pele, but again, he scored three goals. He scored the first three goals of Barca, including the game winner in the 85th minute. Luis Suarez adds a little insult to injury with a stoppage time goal in the end for a 4-2 victory for Barca. His 50th, Lionel Messi's 50th hat trick of his career. Let me ask you this real quick, because I heard this one thanks to Tony Miola over a counterattack on SiriusXM. For this particular stat, does he have more hat tricks or less hat tricks than Cristiano Ronaldo?
Less, right?
He has less by one. Cristiano Ronaldo scored 51 hat tricks in his career. Lionel Messi with his 50th on the season. You know, you couple that with the assists. I believe he has 11 assists on the season as well. This is really a big week for him, Rob, and for Barca in general. Again, massive challenge at Sevilla on the road in La Liga, trying to fight off Atleti, a hard-charging Real Madrid. Now we have midweek here, Wednesday, we have El Clasico in the Copa del Rey against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. And then we go to the Bernabeu again on Saturday, if I remember correctly, for the El Clasico proper in La Liga. So a massive week, and this is kind of a great way to start it off, especially given the 0-0 draw in against Lyon in Champions League midweek, don't you think, Rob?
Absolutely. He needs to be in good form, and even though many people say that he, you know, needs to take a rest, I mean, he's just saving them gracefully. But I do worry about the fitness of Lionel Messi. That's the one thing I have worry about.
It's a lot of wear on his legs. And we know he's such a focal part of what Barca does week in and week out. Of course, I mean, he's Lionel Messi. You have to start to wonder how much wear and tear this will place on him. And does Ernesto Valverde look at the matches coming up after this week to kind of give him a break? Because, I mean, what's the focus? They're still in line to win a treble, depending on what happens on Wednesday in the El Clasico in the Copa del Rey. They're still on line to win a treble. They're still in the Champions League. They're still tops in La Liga. So they have everything to play for still. And I think it's going to be on Valverde to really manage what Messi does. And he's got the right tools. I mean, he's got a hard-charging Arthur that's playing well. He's got Philippe Coutinho, who's also, you know, looking for minutes. Ousmane Dembele. I mean, he's got options at Barca. And I think it's on Valverde at this point to kind of make sure he spreads out Messi's time and keeps him as fresh as he can moving forward. You know, one of the things we talked about a couple of years ago with Real Madrid against Juve in the Champions League was the fact that Zidane did such a good job of rotating the players over and over and over again that the minutes were really spread out amongst everybody. And I think it's on Valverde to do something like that to see if he can get Barca over the finish line in all three competitions would be something incredible.
Absolutely.
So I know we're running out of time, Rob, tonight. So let's give it to you. Let's go over what we've got for matches of the week coming up this week. We're going to welcome back an old friend in MLS, and then we'll hit the trivia answer.
Absolutely. So we'll start off with the CONCACAF Champions League, as we have Houston Dynamo taking on Guastatoya Tuesday at 8 p.m., a 1-0 aggregate in the first leg between Houston. In the EPL, we have Chelsea against Spurs Wednesday at 3 p.m., a London derby. In the Bundesliga, we have Mönchengladbach against Bayern Munich Saturday at 12:30 p.m. In La Liga, we have two El Clasicos, actually. We have the Copa del Rey on Wednesday, and we have in La Liga Saturday at 2:45 p.m., so definitely a big week in Spain. In the EPL, we have the Merseyside Derby between Everton and Liverpool, Sunday at 11:15. In Italy, we have Napoli against Juve, Sunday at 2:30 p.m. That could indeed decide the Scudetto here, Joe. Okay. And, of course, in Ligue 1, we have Marseille against Saint-Étienne, Sunday at 3 p.m. And finally, as you mentioned, MLS is back as we have DC United taking Atlanta United, the defending champions, Sunday at 6 p.m.
some great matches this weekend. You know, Napoli, Juve, like you said, could decide the Serie A. Marseille, Saint-Étienne are two teams fighting for European positions. So that one's going to be an interesting one. Obviously, Merseyside is always Merseyside, El Clasico, of course. The London Derby midweek, especially with Chelsea coming off of all the controversy in the Carabao Cup, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that moving forward. Does Kepa start on Wednesday?
I think so.
Okay. I think he does too, but I gave you my opinion. If I were sorry, what I would do. So, and then Atlanta, like you said, start out defending their MLS Cup title. No Almiron, no Tata Martino. They've got big changes there, and we're going to have to see if they can effectively defend that title, and they're going to have a tough challenge against Wayne Rooney on Sunday at 6 p.m. in DC United. So,
absolutely.
Rob, why don't you give us a trivia question again?
Yeah, absolutely. So Juventus have tied their best away record ever with this season, with 25 unbeaten games away. Can you name the last season that happened?
So I was kind of guessing back and forth, and I was thinking about that season they had the 100 points, which I thought was 13-14. It could have been 14-15. I'm not sure, but you said they were all wrong anyway. So I'm going to dip back into the Champions League era of like the 90s, 94, 95, or 95, 96. I can't remember. I think it was 95, 96. And I think I'm going to give you that as my answer. The 95, 96 season, that Del Piero team, you know, he was young. I that's the one I'm going to go with, 95, 96.
I'm going to tell you, you're incorrect.
Of course. You want to give me some players or something, a little hint that I can go with?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Del Piero, Buffon, Paul Pogba.
Oh, okay. So Paul Pogba's got to be 12, 13, or 15, 16. I'm going to go 15, 16.
Nope.
Damn. 12, 13?
Nope.
I think that's too far back, actually, for Pogba. Well, I mean, it's got to be somewhere in here. So Pogba's been gone for 2 years, so it's not 18, 19. It's not 17, 18. I don't think it's 16, 17 either. I think I've already given you 15, 16, right? I did, okay. So, you know, 14, 15?
Nope.
All right, give it to me then.
2011,
2012. 11-12. Ah, I didn't think Pogba went back.
The season they went unbeaten.
Okay. I didn't think Pogba went back that far, but I guess he does. It's got to be his first season then.
Yeah, it was his first season.
Okay. So that was that. So all right, my friend. Well, with everything off the docket, I think we should probably hit the closing music and call it another evening, don't you think?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So, and get this all fired up and get it turned down a little bit, of course. So, for episode 235 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Elijah Newsome from Coming Home Newcastle for joining us. Next week, when we return, we're going to give you more Champions League. We're going to give you CONCACAF quarterfinals. We're going to look at El Clasico both on midweek and on the weekend as well. So, for episode 235 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
Ritter Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.